11th episode of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December 11th, 2011. My name is Matthew Furlough, and this is my brother-in-arms, James Furlough.
Hello there. I'll be honest, there's a lot of news this week. It was really hard to pare it down to the most important, but we did it.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I had a hard time kind of settling on what I really wanted to talk about as well. It's crazy, you know, middle of December, you think all the new products are out, but people are talking, stuff's happening. So this week, like every week, we're going to be talking about the corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. This is going to be a short disclaimer brought to us by James Furlough.
Courtesy of HP, really. Who, by the way, is the company I work for. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of their opinions. And so I should always say I think. And if I ever say we think, I meant to say I. There you go.
Nice. All right. Let's not mess that up at all. If I make any guesses at what HP sells... That's not an official guess, by the way, like last week.
That's right.
So if you'd like to follow us in any of our cool capacities, we've got a Google Plus page, a Facebook page, we've got a Twitter page, at Furlough Bros. We've got our own personal Facebook and Twitters. My Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And you can download these podcasts from iTunes and get it through the podcast, or you can go straight to furloughbros.com and get it there. So there's all sorts of venues to get in contact with us, to get information from us, to see the articles that we were talking about this week, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, and as we hinted at and teased you with last week, we are going to hold a contest this week to help, entice you to actually do one of those things that we just suggested. So here's the deal. It is the very first Furlough Bros giveaway. And yeah, that's right. And this week we are giving away, wait for it, a Bob the Autographer t-shirt. Bob the Autographer, you say. What's that? Well, it happens to be a website of whimsical shirts that we may or may not be involved in. We are. But it just so happens that that we do have some shirts, and they're pretty hilarious, and we're giving a few of them away. So, you want a shirt? Here's what you do. It's very easy. It's two steps. The first one, like us on our Furlough Bros Facebook page. Just type in Furlough Bros into the search. You'll find it, or visit our website, and I'll have a link there, I'm sure. The second, you just got to do one of the following. That's it. First, retweet this post. There's a little Twitter button at the bottom of the post. I'm pointing down to the bottom for those of you listening on audio, which is all of you. So either retweet this post or leave us a comment below telling us what excites you the most about our podcast. So, the contest, it starts now.
Yes.
And is going to end next Saturday, December 17th at 8 p.m. At that time, we will choose a winner at random, so your comment doesn't even have to be coherent, and we will contact them. So if you leave a comment, you should probably at least leave some semi-real information on there. We use a system where you can sign up for different stuff. If you do your Twitter account, we'll contact you through there and, you know, all that stuff. So anyways, we're doing this giveaway. It's for the U.S. only right now because, honestly, I don't even know how to ship international. I'm not willing to find out how to do that. But that's what it is. So, Furlough Bros giveaway. Good luck to all you all. We hope that you participate, and there's at least more than one person to
retweet
this.
Yeah, that would be preferable. So please get involved. All right. Well, without any further ado, we might want to get on to the official show. So, James.
Oh, I guess I'm up first. So I was shared this article. It was actually written a little while ago. It looks like it was November 28th on Forbes. And it was shared with me through email. And so, and sometimes it takes a while to get to you. But no matter, it found me. And I thought it was just a very interesting piece. It's talking about leadership and comparing Ballmer of Microsoft to Bezos of Amazon. And just and it starts off, you know, hey, these two are they're from around the same area, Seattle. However, they have very two different styles, I guess. Approaches, yes. So Microsoft, as we know, is America's leading software company. Unfortunately, it's as the article states, its value has pretty much gone nowhere over the last 10 years. And what's interesting about Ballmer is that he consistently defends Windows and its Office products. And in the article, it says he tells anyone that'll listen that he is confident that Windows will be part of the future landscape because it has been for the last 20 years. And so because of its past, it's going to continue on into the future. As the stock price would seem to indicate, not a ton of investors totally agree with him from a growth standpoint. I guess if they thought it was if it was literally declining, you'd watch the stock price fall. So I guess in that sense, he's right. But Microsoft really isn't going anywhere. Of course, don't get me wrong, they're making buckets full of money, so I guess it's not, you know, it's hard to complain too loud, right? But in all other places where they're trying to, you know, do something new and interesting, whether it's with their mobile devices or excluding the Xbox, I think is the one shining example of doing something well, you know, they're struggling, they're stagnant. However, when you compare that to Bezos, which once again, leader of Amazon, their value has skyrocketed to nearly 90 times the earning over the last decade. And so they're on a tear. And what's interesting about Bezos is that he rarely ever talks about the past. He most exclusively will talk about the future. We're going to this. We're getting into this market. And, you know, and as a result, I mean, like an example, I guess, would be like their core book business, right? That's what Amazon's all about. But that they clearly do not just do books anymore. I mean, they went crazy, made a Kindle to do digital books. You can buy groceries off of Amazon now, you know, which you're just like, what? For me, pretty much, I do like any electronic shopping is done on Amazon. Heck, even non-electronic shopping is done on Amazon now. I mean, they're just very, you know, two very, very different types of companies. And so, or different types of, well, they are two different types of companies, but with two very different types of, you know, outlooks. Ballmer is very much like we've been big time in the past, and Bezos never even talks about the past. It's all about the future. What's cool about this article is it then says, let's look at a few other companies that need some help, you know, and what they're going to be doing in the future. So one of them, he looks at AOL, and he actually tries to give some advice. He says, AOL, you know, it's like, what are they going to do? They're one that's been huge in the past, and they've got some, you know, they got some ideas, but nothing really coherent. And so it's like, what's AOL going to do into the future? Dell's another one where they came up with this whole supply chain strategy that was amazing and, you know, netted them tons of money. Everyone copied them. And so, you know, the profits have shrunk, and they just have not been able to say, like, okay, what's that next thing that we're going to do? I mean, they recently just canceled the Dell Streak, which is their version of an Android tablet. So, you know, things aren't working. And then it brings up my favorite, HP, saying, you know, we got a new CEO, and she's already reassured everyone that 2012 is not HP's year, but we're staying with PCs. You know, HP is something that has had an awesome history. It's, you know, it's been around, it's been doing great things, but that question becomes, okay, you know, what are we going to do to move forward into the future? And then the last one that he gives, which is kind of a surprise, is Groupon, a brand new startup. And, well, I guess technically they're a public company, so they're not really brand new anymore. But they're, you know, they're growing, like, super, super fast, or at least they were. But the question now is, like, what are they going to keep doing to keep their momentum going? And they got some serious questions, you know, that they need to answer in terms of their business model. And so it's just, I don't know, it was a very interesting article. It was very cool to say, you know, there's, if you just look at stock prices as a measurement of success, clearly looking toward the future, and, you know, shocker, right? Looking to the future and picking out what your next moves are and not depending on your current products to keep you where you're at is the way to go.
Yeah, I thought it was a very interesting article. I read it too. And one of my first thoughts is a video that oftentimes resurfaces that kind of mocks, that's used to mock Ballmer, is his response when asked about the iPhone. And he cites the fact that, you know, look where we are. We've got tons of Windows 6 phones, Windows Mobile 6 phones in the field where we're currently manufacturing, we're currently delivering. Apple's doesn't have a single one that they've ever sold. What are the chances that, you know, Apple's going to come in and steal the game? And you have Apple sitting here who's trying to rethink what the phone will be. They're trying to bring you something new and look to the future. And obviously, Windows 6 just got demolished along with another, quite a few other devices and platforms. And by Apple and Google, who are looking to a new platform, a new future, you know, blazing a trail.
Yeah.
And I think I really do agree. I think that that is one of Ballmer's biggest weaknesses. And you know, I think, you know, slowly they do, every once in a while they do some things right. And, you know, and like you said, I think obviously the Xbox is the shining example currently. And I still think Office is still a quality product. And
yeah, totally.
You know, still doing well. But there's a real concern there. And I think the problem with the growth thing is that it's the rest of the industry is growing, and yet they're not. And that's the real concern, is it's like, you know, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. Yeah, so, yeah, their stock price isn't falling. Their growth isn't, they're not on the decline yet. But the very fact that they're not growing, I think, is a bad sign and really troubling for a lot of investors. And I think that that's something that is sort of universal across these platforms, that really these companies that aren't moving forward, that these big ones that you showed examples of. You know, it's the Wii right now and Nintendo. They're in that spot right now. They're looking into the past. They had this huge platform, and now the platform's not growing anymore, and they're freaking out. They've got to move forward. It'll be interesting to see how Microsoft deals with that, how Ballmer adapts to that, if he does at all. But it also, that article did a great job pointing out all these different companies, like Dell, which, you know, really, and RIM is another perfect example of a company who focuses on past technologies and doesn't allow them to move forward.
What I learned in my marketing classes is that companies have a competitive advantage for 10 years. If they have one,
right,
and it's almost like clockwork. It's pretty crazy. I mean, there's few exceptions to that rule, but you get about 10 years to where you can really dominate and rock a market, because that's about how long it takes everyone else to figure out how to do what you're doing and or do it better. And it's funny, if you look back at Dell's stock price, it was exactly 10 years before HP caught back up again, and so it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's great to have a product, write it, enjoy the fun. It's interesting. When did here, you like this one? When did they introduce the iPod?
About 10 years ago.
Yeah, and it's surprise, surprise, on its way down. Now the cool thing about that is Apple disrupted themselves,
right?
And they did it a couple years early with the iPod Touch and the iPhone, and that's what you're supposed to do. And these are all companies that have not taken that step yet to figure out a way to disrupt themselves. And, you know, you only get 10 years. Now, don't get me wrong; they're still all making gobs of money, So it's not the worst thing in the world. They'll survive. But you never know. It could be kind of like Kodak, right, where life's good, and then all of a sudden, oh.
I know, that's the danger with technology companies is when you hit that, you know, it's kind of the anti-tipping point. It's, you know, RIM, Palm, Kodak are all great examples of companies that were riding it high, and then all of a sudden something happened. And in a flash, they just got left behind. There was no hope for them to catch up to the companies that just blew past them. And they got stagnant, they got slow, and they rode the current. They had these great platforms, these great products, and then all of a sudden somebody came up with something better and blew them away. So
yeah. P.S. I also think you're gonna follow in the same logic, and you're gonna chastise me for this one. But I think that since they came out with the iPhone was in 2007,
mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna say like this touchscreen technology. Is kind of how I'm going to put on it. And this kind of relates to what we talked about even 2 weeks ago. I am going to bet that it is going to be about 10 years, maybe 8. So I'm talking 2015 before we see the next iteration of that revolution.
You think so?
I know what you're thinking. It should be faster. And it should be sooner.
Well, I was actually going to say I think it might take longer. Just because the pointer, the mouse and pointer, the classic architecture as a technology has stayed around for a long time, even though it's evolved.
That's interesting, though. When you think about mobile phones, though, they had the click wheel. RIM had their little ball movement thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's different, and maybe I'm being too picky. But I think what you're going to see is you're going to see huge tablet sales. And the current types of smartphone sales are going to be gangbusters for the next, I guess, you know, we're already 4 years in. You're going to see it's going to go huge for the next 4 years, maybe 5 years, and then you're going to start to see it tip, and everyone's numbers are going to start going down. And that's when that opportunity is going to be there, and someone's going to jump to the next thing, whatever it is.
Interesting.
I don't really know what it is. And I will lump tablets into that group in their current form factor. They're the same thing. They're just larger versions of it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
I concur.
So figure it out, companies. But cool. It was a good article.
Yeah, definitely.
Leadership matters. So real quickly, I just also wanted to say congratulations to Gowalla for being bought by Facebook. Did it say how much they were bought by? Probably more than $1 billion. I mean, more than $1 million. Dude, that'd be sweet if it was more than $1 billion.
Right.
But probably not. Basically, Gowalla is going to be shut down. They were the distant number two for the check-in. Foursquare was kicking their butt. You know, it's a whole network effect, right? And you start to lose, you start to lose more.
Right.
So they figured out a way to get out. Congratulations to them. sorry to all those people who invested in all of their badges and stuff.
Bummer.
Because you're losing it. But hey. Come check out Foursquare. It's pretty nice.
Cool. So just let me get this straight. So Facebook basically bought them to kill them as a competitor?
Well, what they call it is it's called like an acqui-hire. It's an acquisition / hire. They acquire the company but are really just hiring the talent. So they can start working on other Facebook stuff. Facebook does this all the time. They'll buy up small startups, literally shut down the service, and say, you are now working on a Facebook project. But there's something that they did that Facebook liked, and they want to implement that in some way into their own service.
Interesting. Very cool.
So it's not really killing a competitor, because honestly, Facebook's not a competitor, and Foursquare is the one to beat. Not Gowalla. They lost.
That's what I thought. That's why I was clarifying. Speaking of taking care of competitors, read an interesting article earlier this week about Crocs and how they're helping Apple. So what was fascinating about this article is it basically compared two current products using one that's a little easier to wrap your head around and how they're able to, and how Apple is using that to basically build their defense. So as many of you know, Crocs are the super ugly plastic shoes that everybody wears. I guess they're really comfortable.
Jesse says I am not allowed to buy them under any circumstances.
Yeah, they're not fashion forward per se. But one of the things that's interesting about the Crocs, if you've ever handled them, is that they're basically just plastic. They've got an ergonomic design. They're supposed to be really comfortable, but they're more or less, they're just molded. You know, you put them in a mold and you can pop out 20 million of them. So from a design perspective, they're not really complicated. And the reason that's important is because to build a knockoff of a Croc is really, manufacturing-wise, is really easy. And so you could very, the only thing that they had was their brand that would differentiate them from these other things. But if you can take a Croc and build a mold that looks right, just like it, then you can basically create a product that's 100% the same, charge less, and kick Crocs out of their own market. So Crocs had to come up with a method of protecting themselves against competitors from beating them out of their market. So the quote I got here is, in recent months, design patents have been front and center. So design patents are what's going on. In a Silicon Valley drama in which Apple is accusing Samsung of slavishly copying its iPad design. And so basically what they're doing is Croc's legal defense in order to protect themselves was to use this design patent idea to say, we're patenting the design, we're patenting something that, we're not patenting a process, we're not patenting the workings, we're patenting the, you know, like I said, the design. And so Apple, who has arguably a much more complex device, instead of trying to patent a mechanism for how it works or a manufacturing process, they're actually they're trying to patent entire design. So how it looks, how it feels in your hand, the swipe to unlock, the pinch and zoom, all of those things are design patents at that they're claiming they're being slavishly copied. And that is their defense going into these
court cases.
Yeah, thank you. And so the question I have is this a good thing? Is this good for the industry? Is this good for Apple? Is this good for everybody? What are your thoughts, James?
Well, clearly good for Apple. It's an interesting thing, and I was just perusing the article a little bit, and it was saying that the test for infringement is whether or not an experienced shopper, whoever that is, would have difficult telling the two items apart. So I guess you stand 5 feet away and they go, which one's which? in all honesty, I think it's good to protect your designs that you come up with. Given our society, we tend to take it to the extreme. You know, we get super legalistic about these things. Oh, that one has rounded corners. Mine has square corners. Or my rounded corners were, on a 5-inch radius, and these are only on a 4.5-inch radius. So there's a difference. We tend to do those things. You know, I remember a story of a guy. He created this type of grill. It was like this round grill that was slightly concave so that the grease would run off of it and not get on your meat. And, you know, and he was really proud of it. He spent tons of money patenting the thing so that, you know, he could sell it. And Weber saw it and very quickly got around the patent by creating an oval shape. And, you know, so this guy spent all this money, all this time developing it, and Weber just, you know, very quickly went, got it, you know, and they copied it. Technically, I guess they didn't, but they figured out a way to do it. Yeah. I mean, so that's tough, right? And so it's like in a society or a culture where you do have to defend it, but yet there are so many ways to get around it unless you do it absolutely perfectly. That's tough. I think you'll hear arguments either way, right? People say, well, Apple just has to do it better integrate everything together, which I think that they do. And, I mean, that's one of the things that PC manufacturers run into, right? It's like, man, they all look the same. Honestly, right. They all act the same. They all feel the same. And for all intents and purposes, they all are the same. and I don't know. That's tough. I think if they're doing it, like, if it's, and I think that's actually, that's a fair test, right? If you put them side by side and someone goes, nah, I can't tell the difference, you go, okay, clearly you copied a little too much here.
Yeah.
You know, but if you put them together and they go, I can see where they, yeah, they definitely weren't inspired at the very least. Or, yeah, they copied and then deliberately changed a couple things to make it differently. I get, you shrug your shoulders and go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think the real concern here is it's like in the case of Crocs, it's so simple because there is no way to differentiate yourself, or rather it's so easy to blatantly copy and create an identical product in function and feel. It makes you wonder, you know, you can see why that sort of a patent makes sense in the case of a Croc. Whereas with the iPad, you know, it's there's so many things that you can change on the inside and you can change how it functions. And like you said, you know, PC, from the outside, it can be... if there's no stickers on a PC, it's literally can be impossible to tell the difference, even once you're using Windows, to tell if it's got an i7 or an i5, to tell if it's got 8 gigs of RAM or 4 gigs of RAM, to tell if it's got... Yeah. You know, I mean, you have to become, you know, for a lot of people, that's just patently crazy to try to figure out those differences. You have to be an advanced user before you understand what those differences are and what the implications of that difference is. You know, not to mention bus speeds on your motherboard and, you know, power supply requirements, you know, things that people don't even think about at all. So you start to see how, you know, it's a little bit different. You can have a tremendous number of minor changes, and yet the end user may not notice those differences at all. At this point, Apple has still managed to stay price competitive. But I can see where, you know, from Apple's perspective, you know, they pioneered this new technology. There wasn't really a slate-style device before Apple that everybody, you know, could identify in its current form. And so for somebody to come around and just copy it, I don't know. I can understand why Apple wants to defend itself so much. The flip side to that is the classic example of, you know, creative people borrow, geniuses steal, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the part of it that makes me a little bit nervous, because it's like, you know, Apple so far pushes themselves, but it's so easy for a company to stop pushing themselves and just start focusing on protecting themselves. And that does slow down innovation, which I don't think is good for anybody except the patent holder. And so, I don't know, it's a difficult issue to kind of balance out, to figure out, you know, who do I want to win in this case? You know, almost thankfully, I don't have much of a power in, you know, determining that sort of a thing. But, you know, outside of choosing which companies I support financially by buying their products, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting case.
I agree. I like their test, and I'm going to stick by that. You know, if it looks like it, you copied way too much. You got to change at least a couple things. Yeah. I'm okay if you find a similar solution, but it shouldn't be the same solution. That's not fair.
Yeah. Well, it's for the longest time, the reason why all Android phones had 4 buttons was to avoid this sort of, you know, real copying, you know, try to get it away from Apple's one-button solution,
yeah,
as it were, you know. So, they're definitely moving closer to Apple and testing the limits of it. And I don't think this is the sort of thing that will crush the Android platform in total, but it could really hurt quite a few platforms and companies as that comes down, you know, depending on what products they're working in, how close they resemble an iPhone.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I just thought that article did a great job of kind of explaining what is at stake here and what are the companies or what are they looking at when they're trying to defend themselves legally. So very cool article. Something kind of cool, propped up this week. I don't know if you've noticed, but quadcopters are the new big thing in remote control flying devices.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
They are awesome. They have the distinct advantage of being stable, easy to control. They have a lot of articulation, and they don't require a lot of fancy-dancy controls like a standard helicopter.
Huh.
They're easy to fly. So they've kind of become, and they're relatively affordable to make nowadays. There's a lot of tutorials
nice.
On building your own homemade one, so they're getting a lot of play. And earlier this week, TechCrunch had a cool article that they showed with a little attached video. Basically shows, it starts off, you see this big structure, and it's kind of this unique looking wavy thing. It's sort of a tower being built, and it's got a bunch of bricks on it. And then as you watch the video, there's basically a couple quadcopters flying around. They pick up a brick from a pile next to it, then they fly up, they position themselves, they lower themselves down, put the brick in place, and then fly and get another brick. So they're these quadcopters flying around and building the structure.
That's pretty cool,
very
actually.
Neat, yeah.
Yeah, I like one of the comments on the post. It says, it's a quote from Dr. Ian Malcolm. Oh, yeah. Ooh, ah, that's how it always starts. Then later, there's running and screaming. Our favorite Jurassic Park movie.
Nice. Yeah, that's...
I'm still in the ooh-ah stage, I guess. It's like, dude, that's pretty cool. I think one of the really cool things about this video is that it shows multiple helicopters flying around at one time. You know, that's kind of where you go. That's when you start to pick up the vision, and you go, ooh, okay, I see where this is headed. I like it.
Yeah, so to kind of give everybody just a snapshot of what this sort of thing is doing, because from one hand, it seems almost unimpressive as you're watching it, because it's... Oh, it's just a helicopter flying around dropping bricks on. But there's an entire network of computers going on here. So you have your main computer that's kind of controlling the whole design. But when you actually look at the quadcopters, there's a number of computers built into it, or microprocessors with their own RAM, their own storage. There's devices to help stabilize them. There's devices to help them locate themselves. These are all discrete computers. There's computers that are built for communication with this central computer. And then there's this massive networking of knowing where they're supposed to be, knowing where the other ones are. And since they're all moving free in space, they have to keep track of, it's not just a go forward 10 feet, move over 5 feet, because they're flying, so they can move off of that course. So you have to be constantly recalculating, make sure they're not running into each other, making sure that they're putting the bricks where they're supposed to, making sure that it all builds properly. And this sort of a thing is a notoriously difficult project
that
for
computers. That just sounds hard.
Yeah. This is a notoriously difficult project for computer engineers, because the whole idea of having separate, you know, if a computer is communicating with itself, or even subcomputers, like a computer talking to a graphics card, when they're connected in that really, you know, connected, it's a lot easier for them to communicate. But anybody who's ever had problems with a graphics card, installing a new graphics card or RAM or a sound card or anything like that, you know that even when they're hardwired together, they don't necessarily communicate the way that they're supposed to. So now imagine taking these things apart, having it on a wireless system, and you've just got a ton of different components. So what's so exciting about these kinds of projects is that what you see develop here is, from a computer science perspective, is a methodology for having multiple machines that are controlled autonomously communicate and work together. And where this leads, not necessarily seeing, you know, you're not going to walk around and see a bunch of crazy towers built by quadcopters, but what it does is it allows you to, you know, it's kind of like object-oriented design, where, you know, as a programmer, you learn this new methodology of this is how we're going to design programs. Entire languages are built around this concept. Entire courses are built around it. And then we use that technology and build upon it. And so what you'll see here is you'll see the processes for controlling robots to use them to build buildings, to clean things, to work in concert, to do projects that before only human beings could do, and you'll start to see them, you'll start to see those sorts of things that they're learning be applied to an even larger field. It's a very exciting video when you start to understand what the implications of what they're doing is.
Wow.
So.
I like it.
I'm excited. So get ready. Unfortunately, robots are always behind computers because computers move a lot faster than mechanical developments. But I think that, you know, over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you'll see automated manufacturing just explode, especially in America where there's so many people don't want to do manufacturing. And I do think that it is America's pathway back to dominance as a manufacturer is automated manufacturing. And the more that we get into that, the more we're going to become competitive on a world stage. So very cool technology to see.
Well, yeah, it'll also help that wages of those other places are slowly going to start to creep up.
Right.
And then we'll...
Yeah, there's a number of factors that will change the economic world scene, but I think that any company or any country that embraces this kind of technology, any company, big or small, is, you know, there's a huge economic boon to automated manufacturing.
So I'm going to, unbeknownst to Matthew, skip ahead to a different article because it's related. Okay. It was one that was on Thursday, and it says, "Want to make the enterprise social? Learn from Excel." And here's why, because you made a statement earlier that really like struck a chord with me. You said you talked about it being a platform where these robots or helicopters, whatever, are going to lead the way to other creations. And, you know, and it's a platform is the word that you want to use. You use that to build other things. And what I thought was so cool is this article about Excel. And I mean, you immediately think of Excel when you think social, right? I mean, that's just...
Every time. I think Facebook, Excel, cross. It's
a tie between Twitter and Excel, really. I mean, that's just...
Right, exactly.
But here's what I thought was cool. And I have a story to tell around that. We at HP started to use Yammer pretty heavily. You know, just starting. It was like...
What is Yammer? I don't actually know.
Twitter for the enterprise.
Okay.
Yeah. Where basically you can type stuff in, and theoretically only people with a @hp.com email address are going to see these updates. So it's supposed to be a closed community, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So someone discovered it and then started saying, "Hey, you got to get on this. It's going to be awesome." And so it started spreading like a weed, you know, like these social media things do. And so people started using Yammer, and I was like, "All right, fine. I guess I'll get back on it," because I think I signed up and no one was on it. And I was like, "Lame. I'm out." And so so I was like, "All right, I'm going to get back into it." And then someone in HR found out that this thing was starting to take off within HP, and they like were like, "Just so you know, you are not allowed to put anything confidential on here because it's unsecured. It's not inside the HP network. You cannot do that." Which immediately killed the group that I was in, you know, instantly.
Right.
You know, it was only like 20 people at the time. Just, okay, we're done. You know, I mean, it was just, that's it. Because pretty much... that was what we talk about. Everything is confidential that you're going to put on there. Hey, running a new forecast. Oh, did you see that this is, you know, X percent lower than what we thought? Wow, amazing. You know, stuff like that. And so the point of that is to say that to bring something social to the enterprise, Just doing some sort of off-the-shelf solution isn't going to cut it. Instead, what companies should focus on are tools like Excel. Because one of the cool things about Excel, I mean, if you think about it kind of in a way, it's a platform in the sense that Microsoft literally gives you this blank canvas and says, create something. Have fun. You know, do what you want. And the things that people come up with, I think people at Microsoft go, ooh, I don't even know you could do that. That's pretty awesome. And, you know, and just like the Kinect that we've talked about, right? And so somebody needs to create social tools the same way, where they go, here's a bunch of social buttons or features. I don't even know how this would look. Install it on your company server. Make it however you want to make it. Have it do whatever you want to do. You own it. You run it. You can connect it, not connect it. I don't really care. Do whatever. And let the enterprise build it the way they want. They can keep it super simple. They can make it really advanced. Doesn't matter. And those are the kind of systems that will become popular and really take off inside of enterprises because they will, you know, they will be custom tailored and custom controlled, which I think is, you know, a pretty cool concept. It's a cool way to, at least I think, a cool way to think about like Excel and they go, yeah, you know what, you're right. That really is just a huge blank canvas and we need something similar or, you know.
You know, I think one of the things that is so powerful about the modern web technology, number one, it's not a lot of web technology is non-proprietary. Most of it, really. HTML, CSS, PHP, all of the different things that you use to program a web page. And the other cool part about a scripting language is its simplicity. And so I think what happens is you get these, you've got a lot of people like me what come into your company and like you, where people who know how to work with HTML, know how to work with CSS, even if it's on a kind of a more basic level, understanding some of the background technologies that work in on a computer. And I think that companies really need to get more into the idea of open source projects for their company that work on internal servers and can be social networks like that. I think that, you know, and it's, you know, it's like you said, especially if you can make them easy to use tools like Excel, and you can include stuff with, you know, with HTML interfaces, so they're easy to upload. They work on multiple platforms. They're secure because they're all internal on your own servers. The database is easy to understand because it's not some obscure MySQL client. It's basically a superpowered Excel. You know, I think if you were to do stuff like that and build those kind of tools for the enterprise, you would be shocked by what you could give people. And like you said, they'd be these open things and you just let clients work on it, or you'd let the people in your company work on
it. That'd be cool.
Say, hey, you want to spend an hour working on this? It's open source. Have fun. Make it awesome. You know, it's, and you'd have your IT department manage it, make sure nothing's exploding. But I think that if you were to have it being, you know, which you can build those kind of simple to use tools. Okay, everything blew up, so we're going to have to step back a second and reset it all.
Well, it'd be cool to do it in a modular way where, no, you really can't. I mean, you can blow it up, but you just delete that part and try reconnecting it a different way.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's a little more complicated than Excel, I guess, because you have multiple users. And I mean, obviously, it's more complicated than Excel, but that'd be cool.
But the principle of Excel is a great one, where it's, you know, it's a very powerful tool that kind of brings the basics of computer programming to people's hands. And, you know, Excel is very scalable. It's not infinitely scalable. I think that would be the only real limiting problem you'd have with it. But it's, you know, it's games like what's the one called with all the cubes? You can build stuff. You have no
cubes?
Idea what I'm talking about.
Legos?
Not Legos. It's a video game. It just came out.
Oh.
Everybody's gonna be shouting at me as they're listening to this. It's this.
Wait, we should check our chat room.
Minecraft.
Nope, no one has.
There we go.
Suggestion.
Minecraft.
Thanks, chat room.
No one has. So Minecraft is the game I was thinking of.
Okay.
And it's a huge multi-person thing, but a lot of people host their own servers and they'll put in their own technology, and it's amazing how many people will get in there and build on technologies that are already existent. You know,
that's cool.
And just for the fun of it, because I think it's fun, and you know, it's the beauty of open source. So I think that's definitely something that we gotta keep an eye on, and I think that, you know, you could really make some movement in your company to be a useful
tool.
Maybe
Diaspora, however you pronounce it. It was an open source alternative to Facebook a while ago, where great aspirations,
yeah.
The execution was less than awesome.
Yeah. Well, the worst part about it was everybody thought it was this alternative to Facebook, and then you realize that Facebook was pumping... They were like the major financial contributor, because they were going to let them spend all the time developing this technology, take a bunch of risk, and spend the time. And then because it's open source, they were just going to take all the technology and incorporate it into Facebook if they came up with anything good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so awesome. I think that was the biggest problem. When everybody figured out that was what was going on, it lost a little bit of its steam.
I didn't know that. But that's kind of shady.
Yeah, so, I mean, I you know, if you want to work on that project, it's cool, but unfortunately, since it's a technology that's completely devoted to, or dependent on, you know, millions of people getting involved with it in order to make it popular, you can't just have a few people having fun. So,
nope, I'm cool.
But I agree. I sort of fumbled that one.
Yeah, happens.
But... So, I've got no transition to get to this topic.
Wait,
but...
Let me think.
Okay.
Speaking of platforms, there is a mobile platform that is struggling with being laggy.
Close enough, yeah. That's. And what platform might that be?
It's iOS.
iOS, wrong. iOS is not
WebOS.
Laggy for
WebOS.
Most people. WebOS is laggy, but not for the reasons that we're going to discuss.
What is BlackBerry's platform called? BlackOS? BBX?
Yeah,
or...
I don't remember. They have this new one. BBX is the new one. And it's stupid.
What about Symbian? Is that one laggy?
No.
Windows Phone?
I don't know. I've never used it.
Point something?
Something like that. Probably a little bit, depending on the device.
Okay. There's one obvious one I'm missing. What is it?
It is Google's
Zoom!
Android.
Oh, Google's.
Oh, that's right. So some of you are going to be listening and start shouting at me. My phone's not laggy at all. But the truth is, it is a little bit laggy.
My bad.
You may not.
I didn't know that.
And unfortunately, when you do actual comparison tests, you know, side by side, there is a little bit of a lag that can occur with Androids, especially with a platform that's running running a lot of background apps. And it's not something that you experience with iOS.
To which they would reply, that's because you really can't have applications running in the background.
That is how they would reply. But what I found so interesting about this article, and why I want to bring it to you, and the nature of programming, is that it's a fundamental problem that can occur with engineering. So, okay. Android, when it was originally developed, was actually being developed as a competitor to BlackBerry. They started developing Android before the iPhone came out. Obviously, Apple was already working on the iPhone. So, as you know, for the very reason that Schmidt got kicked off of the board, this was the essence of the problem.
Yeah, so I gotta work on timing here, because Eric Schmidt did make the point Android or at Google, whoever their name is, Google was working on Android before Apple even released a phone. But you, I mean, obviously, clearly, Apple does not go like, oh, hey, check out what we made. We did this last night, well, you know, for the fun of it. They had been working on it for a while. Heck, even Steve Jobs says they started on a tablet, put that on the shelf to make an iPhone because it could scroll cool. And so Smith, he had to have known that they were working on it ahead of time. So that statement that, oh, well, Google was working on it before Apple even released a phone, that seems a little disingenuous to me.
Yeah, especially since he'd be like one of the few people that aren't part of Apple Corporation that would have had inside knowledge about.
Okay, so I'm going to go back on what I just said. Do you think the board actually knows what goes on in Apple R&D before it gets released?
So this is what I was going to say. I don't think they know specifics. I think that they get to see where money's being spent. And I think that if you have a really critical mind, you can make a very educated guess about what's about to happen. Because Apple had to make huge investments in wireless testing so that they could test the wireless system on the iPhone. You know, obviously, they would have seen those sorts of financing things get put forward, and they would have been able to put together the pieces. And all that would have had to happen, I think, is for Schmidt to realize that, you know what? Apple might be working on a phone. Why don't we work on a phone OS? BlackBerry's the only one out there. Well, I'll bet we could do something awesome. And so what this article points to is that not only did they think that they were, you know,
heck, for all we know, they're reading the same piece of research and came to the same conclusion. But anyways, all right, I'm just saying, timing's a little wonky. I'm gonna benefit of the doubt to Google. They didn't straight up say, oh, let's copy Apple. But they probably did go, you know, the cell phone market's probably not a bad idea.
You know, hey, it's like the Crocs issue. You know, if the consumer can't tell the difference. So what's interesting about this article is they point to a fundamental thing that they did with the Android device and how it works. Now, since at the time, as you pointed out earlier in this episode, RIM's BlackBerries were using the little scroll wheel thing with the clicking ability. And that was like, everybody thought that was like the supreme technology. It was the best way to navigate a complex phone. I know. but at least it was a huge selling point for RIM. And so the Android team thought, we'll design a phone that has that same interface capabilities. It'll use something similar to the click wheel.
So you're saying that they didn't just come up with their own way of doing it, they just copied another similar technology? Interesting.
Something like that. and the issue that arises here, and it's one that you'll as soon as I explain it, you'll instantly see why this is a problem for RIM as well. How you build graphics and how you actually compose your entire your frame and how you interact with a interface is way more complicated with a touch interface. Touch interface, especially multi-touch interface, because it's not just where your fingers are touching, because there's an entire number of cells that your finger touches, and so it has to differentiate between one touch, two touches, where those touches are, how it's moving. There's a whole bunch of interacting that needs to be analyzed. Then on top of that, there's all the graphics.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say, I can totally imagine that engineer when he first got it to work, and it just showed like it just had the black screen. It wasn't even glass. I'm sure it was like a piece of plastic or whatever it was. And he just had it, and I bet it was just like crosshairs on some screen. No, I bet you it was like it would just read off the numbers, and he would go, check this out.
Right.
And he would just pinch with his hands, and you'd watch the XY coordinates change. You go, that's awesome, huh? I mean, I could just totally see him doing that.
I've so done that before. Isn't that the coolest thing you've ever seen? And so what happens is
he had one, her girlfriend is like, "Uh-huh."
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Great. So So one of the things that happens is with a really simple interface like a clickable little scroll ball, you don't have to worry about how you prioritize that in the processing chain of command. I'm going to give you an example for those of you who are old enough to have experienced this. So back in the day, how many of you used to be using your Windows program, using your Windows computer, you'd open up a program and the mouse would freeze?
All the time.
All the time. Now, what's interesting about the mouse freezing is that oftentimes you'd be like, you couldn't tell if your computer had frozen or if it was thinking and it was just waiting. So you just have to wait it out. And, you know, if you really wanted to push your luck, you'd wait a half an hour. And if it still was frozen, you'd know it had
actually
frozen.
Yeah, well, I think it used to do in startup all the time, too. And that was just, still going.
Right.
It's not actually warmed up yet.
Right. And that was a classic issue for Windows. If you use a modern Windows OS, though, you never have that issue. The mouse always is, generally speaking, 99% of the time, it's always loose, unless the computer's actually crashing.
Well, I was going to say, you could have the entire thing locked up. It actually did crash, and the mouse still moves.
Right. Right. And what that is, it's a term called threading, where you basically create, the computer has different processes that it can break out into different parts, and it can pull from one process or another, and you can prioritize those differently. So basically what Windows did was it created a thread that handles the mouse, where the mouse is, reading the mouse, and the pointer. And that way, you can know that even if you're program is frozen, if it's working in the background, or if it's just taking forever for it to load everything into RAM because you're opening up a new program, you could know your computer hasn't frozen, it hasn't locked up, because the mouse is moving. Now, what's ironic is that'll actually slow down the rest of the computer, because it's giving priority to you flicking around the mouse. But from a user interface perspective, it's a lot better, because people don't just force restart the computer because some program's taking too long to open up anymore, and you can't tell that it's open. So that's a huge change, and it's a really big advantage. Well, the more complicated your user interface is, the more amount of processing it requires to actually keep track of where all your inputs are.
Okay, fair enough.
And so what you see with the Android platform is, when they designed it for a simple interface. And so they didn't give the threading that handled input any priority over the rest of the background processes. Whereas Apple gave the touch interface the absolute highest priority. So essentially what it does is it means that, watching things move. And essentially what it did was it means that your iPhone will always feel fluid. It will always have this nice kind of, you know, things will flick really nicely. And even if the program's taking forever to load or it's crashing, it's still going to feel fluid while it's doing it. Because they give the processor the absolute priority to controlling your interface.
So I had a 3G before I upgraded to the 4S. And it used to be slow, because once I upgraded enough times, you know, it just could not handle what it had. You know, you've heard me rant about it before. But one of the things that used to happen is, like, I would open up, like, text messaging or something lightweight, and it would freeze. It wouldn't do anything. But what I could do was I could start typing and just touch the letters, and then it would do almost like, remember, this would happen on a Windows machine, too. All of a sudden it would go, you know, and fill in whatever it is that you typed. My iPhone did the exact same thing. So I could it was ridiculously slow, so I could type a couple sentences, and it literally would fill it in that entire time. Is that part of why that's working? Because it is tracking, and it just hasn't processed or given whatever to do with it to the application yet, because it's still loading. Interesting.
Right, exactly. It's given such a high priority. Well, what's funny about that is that part of the reason why it's taking so long is because it's paying attention to what your fingers are doing.
It was slow no matter what, and so I felt good. I was done typing by the time it started up. That makes sense how that works that way.
So what's interesting about what the Android team is doing is that they're trying to do two things to try to quelch this problem. Number one, they're doing hardware acceleration. They're devoting, which is essentially taking one of your cores and turning it into a graphics processor in a roundabout sort of way. So you're able to build objects on the screen a lot faster. Graphics increase. That helps a lot. And then the other thing that they're doing is they're putting, you know, super powerful chips inside of them. The thing is that from a fundamental user interface perspective, iOS or Android on identical pieces of hardware, iOS will always be faster than an Android. It'll always be more fluid. And I think that people, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, people spend more money on that sort of thing. They want a thing.
I was going to say, do you think that they'll get to a point where they'll just be fast enough that, you know, the human won't be able to detect it? This will be a non-issue?
Yes. Well, it's one of those, you're constantly in the battle between speed of the computer versus size of the apps. I think that certain apps will always push the systems to their limits, especially on Android, where you're able to get malware and you're able to put third-party apps that aren't controlled, and so they might push the system. They're designed to push the hardware to the limit, and it's those outer regions of performance where you'll really see the flaws in the operating system. Whereas in iOS, they do two things. Number one, they're in the outer regions. They're designed to work a certain way, to perform a certain way, to minimize that user interface problem. And they also control the apps that go on the platform, which also, you know, they can stop you from really pushing the device.
Which I didn't know this. When you actually submit your podcast to iTunes, it goes through a review process even on that. Yeah, so
I didn't know.
So how about this, listeners? You can actually technically subscribe by clicking one of the buttons in a previous post, but we're not actually listed in the iTunes store yet because we're still under review.
Yeah. That's what I thought was going on. I couldn't figure out why that was going on.
Yeah,
but that makes
sense. It's submitted, but they have a real person look at it and listen to it or something. I don't know. So even their podcast,
hopefully they like it.
You know, in that sense.
Hey, Apple. We just want everyone who works there to know that you are all amazing looking people who are smart and funny.
Gosh darn it, we like
and
you.
And we like exactly. So my last point on this Android, on the Android problem, and this is another interesting engineering issue that comes up, is you can ask the question, well, why don't you just fix it? Why don't you make it better?
Windows obviously did eventually.
And that was really difficult for Windows. There was a lot of programming that had to go into that. The problem that is coming up for Android is that this issue is baked into a lot of the apps and how the apps are programmed.
Yeah, but can't they just say, hey, next version is going to not work with these apps, upgrade them appropriately? Or, I mean, Apple
yes,
would do
they
that.
Can say that. But, yeah, that's sort of a, well, but that is a classic Apple thing that they'll do that other companies won't. You know, Microsoft's big thing is they don't do that sort of thing to you. It won't make you. There's always a way to have reverse compatibility because they're terrified of the idea of having this huge library of. They think that it's, you know, you compete with libraries, and how bad would it be for Android, who already suffers from a app store that isn't as well supported as Apple's. There aren't as many high quality apps. They don't make as much money. Just think about what would happen if they said, oh yeah, none of your apps are going to work on this next platform. How much of a revolt would
there be? Well, I guess it depends
on
how
hard
it is
to switch. People suggest,
right? If they were just like, you got to switch APIs from this to that.
Yeah, that's true. I think that there are things that Apple, that Google can do. Yeah, that's one of them. Make it easy to change. The other thing they might be able to do is, theoretically, it would be possible for them to take the apps and reprocess them and turn them into, you know, if it's within their app store or something, and essentially take all of their apps and say, we're going to take a month and rebuild all the apps so that now they'll work, they'll function. But that would require, that would probably require getting not just the binary package, but actually getting the source code. Which they would never get that. Whereas Apple, you submit the source code, so Apple can make changes like
that.
Do
you submit the source code? Is that how that works?
Their entire library. Yeah, because they have to be able to look at it and make sure there's no no bugs.
I didn't think that's okay.
I think you do. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I've never actually done it before.
All right. So that was the only way they could do an experiment, which involves us creating an app. So for the sole purpose of finding out.
Furlough Bros app. Heck
dude,
yeah.
I like it already. You could do
hey everybody.
Like a punch game, you know? Furlough Bros, we just beat up on each other. Better yet, user uploads their own face, which we superimpose onto a Koopa. I mean, a giant. yeah.
Horned Tona turtle.
You know, just to throw out a random animal. and so, anyways, they superimpose their face, and then they can fight us. I love it. While listening to it.
That'd be awesome. All right,
music that
it's
we
happening,
awesome,
man.
That we created.
Exactly. I am actually already signed up for a Coco program.
Dude, that's awesome.
I have
the latest SDK,
dude,
installed on my computer.
Nice. This is going to be a brief public service announcement for anybody who has their degree. Go check out your local community college. They're fantastic. They've got great classes and stuff. For you to sign up and learn
more,
so I highly recommend it.
I looked.
Well,
I could do Oregon State, I guess, but Lynn Benton County, they have an intro to HTML, which I'm pretty sure I could teach.
That's
the
probably
class.
Right. Yeah,
that's about as fancy as they get.
So.
Anyway, sorry, totally off track. I believe you were getting ready to talk about the next article.
Okay, so the next article is going to be about the next big thing. So first, molybdenite integrated circuit delivers silicone crushing, chip shrinking, graphene blasting action. So for those of you who follow technology, there is a limitation on the size that you can have of a silicone wafer. Specifically, its thickness. You can only get it so thin before the heat of the process dissolves it and it doesn't work properly. So you kind of have to, and it's very rigid. It's not flexible at all. So any of you who are really, 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 really nerdy will recognize the name of the chemical molybdenite as the material that they're currently making
really
superconductors
nerdy.
Out of. High temperature superconductor. Yeah, I know. I actually, to be totally honest, somebody else had to pay it and point it out to me before I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. So basically, this stuff is like the future of awesome technology. So they can make it super thin, like 3 molecules thin is what they're describing as the thickness of the sheets, and they're stable at that thickness. They're flexible. So you can, they're not rigid like silicone wafers where you have to have them, on a chip and encased in hard plastic. You can make them all flexible. So like
what
this would mean from an engineering perspective is you could make an OLED screen where you've got like, you know, it's all flexible and it's got all sorts of crazy light. And you can also build the chips into that flexible material. You can put it in the plastic membrane and build the circuit around it. So you can do all sorts of crazy. I mean, this is obviously quite a few years in the future of manufacturing since it's just lab scale tests. But it's a new technology that they've been showing off. It's the laboratory that's working on it is Laboratory of Nanoscale Electronic Structure, or LANES. And they just demoed the first transistor, which is basically how you would build the foundation for how you would build an integrated circuit. And then So they're working on getting it even higher and, you know, getting a higher level so they can eventually build computers out of it. So it's really exciting technology. And the best part of Molly Bendenite is that it's really abundant on Earth.
So why haven't they already been using it if it's so awesome?
Well, one of the things that happens is, you know, a classic issue of technology is technology doesn't direct itself. Technology is directed by people and money, and people have been betting on silicone, and because silicone's been really promising and it keeps getting smaller at a really regular rate, we can predict can predict the progress, essentially, is what it comes down to. That's the whole essence of Moore's Law, that every 18 months the size will be cut in half and the speed will double. And so we basically, unfortunately, there was a limit to what silicone could do, getting us down that limit. And last year, HP came out with the theoretical limit of how small you could make a silicone transistor. Obviously, they haven't built an entire integrated circuit, much less an entire processor at that size. Sorry, not HP. Oh. It was Intel did it.
I believed you. That's how good I think of HP.
I know. Yeah, you guys have such a huge laboratory. It's possible, but what you're really what you're seeing is finally we're getting to the point where in the next couple of years we really will be manufacturing the theoretically smallest size cores that we can, and where do you go from there but switch materials? And that's why there's this new explosion of looking into different materials to build these sorts of transistors, build ICs.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
I thought
wait for Intel to swoop in and start doing stuff with it.
Definitely. So, if you want, I can keep a...
Here, let me interject with a
real quick
one.
Unless you had something you wanted to chat about.
Give your voice a break here.
Go for it.
So, Netflix, Xbox 360, new. Okay, your turn.
All right, back to 3D.
I guess I can say a little more about it. And I actually got to watch somebody play with it. So Xbox has a new layout thing with it, and along came a new Netflix browsing tool for watching movies on the Xbox 360. So the guy who was shown to me actually doesn't like it because he says it's way too busy of a screen. And, you know, fine, whatever. I think it looks cool. Yeah, sure, maybe it's too busy. That's possible. They could make the titles bigger. That way there's less on the screen. He could get a smaller TV. That would also reduce the number of titles shown, I think. yeah, it's not going to happen. But what's really cool about it actually is the whole like gestures and voice capabilities. It's not quite like Siri where theoretically like, or a Siri type thing where
you
could
say,
like you turn on Xbox and you say, "Hey Xbox, play the latest episode of The Office." Right. That seems like something you would do with Siri, right? I mean, that sounds like a Siri type of command. Xbox doesn't work that way at all. Instead, it's more like single word instructions, and you have to work it through the menu system. So you say like Xbox, applications, Netflix, episodes, The Office, episode 19, something like that.
That sounds clunky as all.
But I mean, in all honesty, though, I mean, you literally are just speaking. And if you know what you're doing, I guess he said, and he did show one example. He tried to show a couple more, and they just didn't work because he, you know, whatever. but it's getting there. Where he was like, Xbox apps, Netflix episodes, and it went bloop, and then it, you know, it understood that entire tree, and then it popped up all the episodes, and then he said Xbox, and then the episode. So, you know,
That's
so you cool. don't have to do. You still have to say it, but you don't have to necessarily wait. Though, to be honest, it spends some time thinking in between each request. that you do. I mean, it's like it's a longer than what you think it would be type of request. It's still faster to hit the buttons, which, you know, that's all this have is going for right now is the convenience of you don't have to reach over and grab the controller.
Yeah, which, you know, it's an interesting point, if you don't mind me interjecting right now, about the nature of Siri, is that Siri is slower than just, for some things, Siri is slower than just flicking to your apps. But for other things, it's like, for like, you know, if you just wanted to look up the weather, it's probably quicker to just hit it, flip to your weather, and then click on your weather. But they designed the Siri requests in such a way that they're all really complicated things that you're asking it to do. It's like, set an alert when I leave the house to pick up milk. That sort of a thing, you know, setting up a geofence so that it can track your location, that would take a tremendous amount of time to actually build that. And so the fact that it does it all automatically
for
you...
So, total sidebar, given what you just said. So I use Siri for three things regularly. And so the first one is to set a timer. It is so fast to say... Set a timer for 10 minutes. Done. You cannot do it that fast using your fingers. It's impossible. So that is it. I mean, and it just, and it's like 10 minutes and counting. Done. All right. Awesome. Perfect. The other one is the set of reminders. I'll do a little laundry or something and I want to throw it in the dryer afterwards. I'll say, set a timer to switch the laundry in an hour, something like that. Set a reminder. No. What will I say? Stop, James. Think. I will say to Siri, remind me to change the laundry in an hour. Because reminder set, done. That is so much faster than I could ever do with reminders. And I don't think that's just because I don't have practice typing in reminders. I don't think you could do it that fast. On the text messaging, yeah. I will do it when in the car regularly. When I'm not in the car, I just type it. That's faster, I think. Yeah. It is that, and for whatever reason, I feel a little goofy sitting in my office talking to my phone on a text message. but yeah, so I think that's all that to say is, yeah, there are some cases, and this will get there. I mean, it's pretty, it's just cool. It's interesting. It looks neat. It's one more thing that Kinect is helping, you know, to integrate in. And I guess you could do the gestures and stuff too, which is kind of neat. I've always thought that was neat. But anyways.
Yeah.
Xbox keeps making improvements.
Yeah, I'm not bagging on 360. I'm not bagging on 360 too hard since Apple doesn't have a competing technology in the TV space. But
so you're saying, so let me interpret this correctly. The second Apple comes out with something, the Xbox gets bashed. Is that how that's going? That's what I just heard implied.
I'm just saying, if they do what we expect them to do, I think the product will be more compelling. That's all I'm saying. So.
I don't know. The Xbox is pretty cool, I'll be honest.
I'll give you that. There's a lot that the Xbox can do that Apple will not even try to touch. But
of course, I'm not even on a television. But anyways,
yeah,
we're getting
there.
That's
the difficult part. So
I do want a monitor though, and it does do HDMI. So
nice. Oh man,
I just need a sound system of some sort.
Speaking of HDMI, I'm going to brag to everybody right now. So my new computer has an HDMI output. I bought a 15-foot HDMI cable from Newegg.com for anybody who wants some nice cheap tech stuff. $10.
Was that cheaper than Amazon?
Yeah, I was. It was like $8 for the cable, and there was no shipping, which you can do if you have
That's
an Amazon
deal.
Prime deal. But anyway, so now we can plug it into the big old HP TV that we have, and I can watch movies.
I was
playing
nice.
StarCraft 2 late into the night last night on this screen. It was awesome. It's so much fun.
That is awesome. Dude, I can't wait to come over on Christmas break.
Oh, dude. And my computer is a Blu-ray disc player, so if you have any Blu-ray player... I know, this thing is...
I don't.
This thing is... Neither do I. I just say that. this thing is fancy. Fancy, fancy, dancy. So, anyways, speaking of fancy, dancy stuff, our next awesome article, we got the Big Memory Cube Gamble. IBM and Micron Stack, their chips. So, as this move to improve the actual fundamental building blocks of your computer, whether that's transistors, microprocessors, CPUs, stuff like that. One of the other places that they're trying to improve the technology is in how you build RAM, how you build memory. And so currently, all processors, you can imagine it like a piece of paper. And you can draw a whole lot of lines. And it's essentially a 2D sheet. And so everything is designed like that. And so anything, you can put two transistors next to each other, but as you get like another set of chips, they're way further on the actual chipset. And if you look at the size of a transistor compared to the size away from the next the space from the next chip, you're talking like light years. That's an estimation. I don't actually know, but it's a big distance.
Okay. some function of a light year.
Right. It's yeah, either less than or more than.
Probably not. Yeah, okay.
But essentially, one of the things that they, one of the ways to speed up a computer is to compress everything together and make it a lot, the closer you can put everything together, the faster it all moves. And so, they're, one of the big technologies that companies are working on is 3D memory chips.
Memristors or memory chips?
Not memristors.
Chips. Next article.
3D RAM. I know. It's awesome. So, and this chip makes the point that manufacturers have been murmuring about it for the last decade. So, you know, kind of, yeah, we should be able to do this one day. But the chatter is really, the chatter about this stuff has really started to escalate, which suggests that we're really on the brink of a new way to manufacture chips. So instead of your classic DDR3, we'll move to a DDR4 or something like that, if you know that technology, if you're building RAM all the time. DDR3 is the most advanced RAM that we have right now. And so basically what they're doing is they're layering the RAM up and down, and they're creating these columns of copper that allow them to communicate through all these different layers. It's pretty neat technology from
what
cool. I can see. Yeah, and it's hugely energy efficient, so your computers will run cooler, they'll take less energy, you can get the Energy Star rating easier. They're way more compact, so you can put a massive amount of RAM into a tiny footprint. So instead of having like a maximum 8 gigs in your laptop, you'll be able to get a maximum 32 gigs in your laptop or whatever. So the footprint's a lot smaller. And they're claiming there's a 70% cut in its appetite for energy. And there's a radical increase in bandwidth. So there's a tremendous amount of data that you can move around. So currently you're talking like 128 gigabits per second. Currently you're talking 6 gigabits per second for the normal ones. These would be able to run at 128 gigabits per second, which is,
That's, you know, faster.
It's two orders of magnitude larger. So pretty exciting technology. So hopefully this stuff is actually going to be moving forward into the manufacturing, and we'll actually see this in the next 2 or 3 years as the next step in RAM. Really, really, especially now that 64-bit processors are the standard bearer, and you can actually build machines that can take advantage of that much RAM. You know, because 32-bit processors, it's one of its biggest limitations is it can only register 3.5 gigs of RAM. So, in order to take advantage of a ton of RAM, you actually have to have a processor that can handle that. And 64-bit processors, both Windows 7 and OS X, can do that. So, very exciting technology.
So, I was reading some comments, and there was two that caught my attention. The first one was talking about heat and what it would take to cool off something like that because they're right next to each other. But maybe if they're solid state, that's not important. I don't know, which RAM is kind of. But then the other one says, I don't know, these things are starting to look more and more like that chip from Terminator 2.
Yeah, that's a concern. Obviously, if you put these things in quad bots, you're definitely starting to risk an apocalypse due to robots. I think that's a concern. But one of the things that you see, and what's interesting about this is that because the distance that you... One of the things that generates the most amount of heat is pulling the electricity a far distance over a large area.
Huh.
And so when you have a really wide chip, that's what requires so much energy to pull it across.
Yeah.
And with a 70% decrease in energy requirements, that's actually going to make them run cooler. Heat's even less of an issue with this sort of a technology.
I love it. Let's do it.
All right, cool. So we're on it. And yeah, heat shouldn't be an issue. It actually should take care of heating issues. But yeah, so very exciting. I'm down.
That's cool.
I'll buy one.
Yeah, I probably won't just buy that. I'll buy the product that it goes with.
Yeah, okay. I guess
I like the promise of that.
Yeah.
I like all this 3D stuff. Where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. It's very fun.
And then we just add some molybdenite and
make it all flexi-dexy. Actually, and the cool part about molybdenite and RAM, the nature of those things, they're not incompatible. So, you know, you might see those two things blending together nicely in the next 5 years.
Ah, cool. Very cool. So I want to switch gears for a bit here we're running near the end. Which we just got two stories left, so hang on. The first one is talking about Verizon, and this is kind of, it has nothing to do with us because you and I were on AT&T, but Verizon, which means AT&T is coming closely behind, they're getting ready to do family data plans in the next year.
Ooh.
At least that's, they're expected. I don't know what level of truth there is to that. But the basic idea is you buy data for your family. Oh, we're buying 6 gigs of data. And then all you do is you register your devices just like your phones, right? You buy minutes, everyone shares them, and you add a device. You probably pay some flat fee to connect the device, and then you all...
It will probably be a fat fee as well, but...
yeah, that probably wasn't appropriate. Line. but it's really cool because right now I got a plan, Jesse's got a plan, Mom has a plan, you and Lisa don't, but we're using a ton amount of data right now, and I can easily see us be able to drop that down. Furthermore, imagine you'd be able to get on that as well, which would be pretty cool. Maybe not on your phone, but you'd be able to get on it. I could give you my old iPhone and you could actually use it. Think about that.
Speaking about old iPhones that might have gotten gifted to me, I might have had an old iPhone gifted to me earlier this week.
Nice. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Which version, just out of curiosity?
It's a iPhone 3G.
Oh, cool. I own one of those.
Actually, wait. No. No, I'm wrong. It's not a 3G. It's an iPhone.
Original.
Dot, yeah.
I have one of those too, by the way.
I know. So pretty exciting.
Well, if you're interested in potentially upgrading to a slower version, let me know. but I think that's just cool that they're moving in that direction. That's something that I felt like they should have been doing for a super long time. It's ridiculous that they weren't. They finally did it with text messaging, and it sounds like they're headed that way with data. That's awesome. Because I could totally see it where it's just like, no, I just have a data plan. Why would I have a voice plan? I just need texting and data. That's it. Think about that. And you just, you pay one big, chunk of money, fat fee, and then you just register whatever your devices you have, whether it's an iPad, an iPhone, a laptop, whatever. And, it's you and your family. I think it's cool. I think for a while, it's going to give Verizon that competitive advantage. We're like, hey, look, we have flexibility and we're saving you money. I think they lose money in the long run, but they have to. They don't have a choice.
But it does bring an interesting point to devices like, if you're an individual, you can get a quote-unquote family plan for yourself, but really just have your laptop, your phone, and your iPad all on the same data plan.
Yeah.
And so you can just share that data, which is a huge, change in direction. That's very cool. I do like that. Now that you know, that one's a huge selling point for me.
Yeah, and I think they're taking a bet that they are going to pick up those extra devices like iPads and stuff, where people go, yeah, what the heck, I'll pay the extra $5 or $10 to connect it, and, you know, I got the data anyways, who cares? And,
yeah.
You know, and they'll just slowly get you used to it, and then you'll just slowly increase your plans over time.
Yep.
But it'll work. But anyways, very cool. I'm excited for everyone else to follow, and they will. Mark my words.
Yeah, it's the nature of the free market. Woo!
The last thing that I want to talk about, because I have to, because I work for them, is HP and WebOS. No, I don't have to. I'm genuinely interested in this. So I don't know if you caught this, but
I did.
Turns out that HP is going to open source WebOS. I got the email before I read the article, and they since then published the email because, you know, that stuff just gets published, so I can talk about it. But I read it, you know, she was very upbeat, very positive. You know, I think she's like, I think WebOS has its best and brightest future ahead of it. You know, we're excited to make it open source and, you know, give it to the world to improve upon. I went, it's nothing but a pretty graveyard. Then I read another article where TechCrunch interviewed Meg Whitman, and she was like, oh, no, we might. She said they could make an actual HP WebOS-powered tablet in 2013. But it sounds like 2012 is going to be the year of Windows 8 tablets for HP.
Right. So they're keeping it open in their back pocket, seeing if anybody does anything crazy with it. But
which nobody's going to. I can already tell you this.
So Reddit actually got the email on Tuesday, so I read about it on Tuesday as well, or maybe Wednesday, whenever it came out. So they got it early.
Oh, it was within an hour. It was posted.
Right. And the first one of the top comments was, man, this is great news. That means that my WebOS device will still be improving even after HP goes bankrupt.
Ah.
Which I was like, oh, that's a burn.
Yeah. We're not going bankrupt.
No, I know. I thought that was that's mean. But, yeah.
Will it actually be improving? Really?
You know, it's interesting. Their Newton to this day still think it's an awesome device, and there's still a community that likes playing with it. You know, sometimes you'll be shocked by what an operating system like that will, what niche it'll find, it'll survive for decades with a certain niche because, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff happens, and you'd just be shocked by what people will do with it.
Here's what's going to happen. I can already see it. WebOS is dead, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's on life support, and if you, it's done, basically. We don't have to talk about it in the news anymore. Other than what you're going to see is Android and iOS and Windows 7 are going to start to have features like cards that look very similar to WebOS. And we're all going to go, oh, I think I first saw that in WebOS. And they're going to go, yeah, it's open source, so we took it and integrated it into what it is that we're doing. Which means all of those features that those people are fans of, eventually they're going to go, well, I might as well just get an Android or an iPhone because it has everything WebOS has, plus more.
I will make one comment. It is so far the only tablet, smartphone ready OS that is now going to be fully open source. And for people who want to design their own devices, whether that be a tablet
router,
not really. I mean, they claim it's open source, but you can't just download it and load it up on your own device. It's open source-ish, especially if you want to be an OEM. You know, but as an OEM, it's not. You actually have to like work with Android. You have to get permission for what.
Unless you're Amazon, in which case you just go for it.
Right. But as a
actually, you know, I think what Amazon did with the Amazon Fire is like the biggest example of it being open, because I'm pretty sure Google is not thrilled about what happened there.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think one of the things
that you'll see with WebOS is that people who want to build devices that have a complex operating system, but don't want to deal with Android, might find companies like Arduino organizations like Arduino who build microprocessors will build add-ons that will have a WebOS interface that you can build on, which, you know, that kind of thing could be pretty cool. So we'll see.
I do know.
We'll see. My predictions come true. That's what we'll see.
We will see. All right. Fair enough.
Cool. So anything going on in your life?
So I discovered something on Friday, which I should have discovered like a year ago.
Yeah.
One of the things that Max did not have, which I couldn't figure out how to do it, was, how do I want to say it? Like, if I have an icon on my desktop and I have a bunch of windows open, it was never easy to get to the icon on my desktop to click it. Does that make sense? I'd have to like move a window or try to minimize it or something like that to get it out of the way so I could click on this icon. And not to say that there was an easy way to do it on Windows either, but for whatever reason, it always felt easier in Windows than it did on a Mac. And so I actually used to do like, I would go to the Finder, open up a new window, then go to the desktop window to open up that icon so I didn't have to move my windows. It was messy. Over to a friend's house, same guy who owns a pair of Crocs, by the way, and loves them. And I was messing around on his new MacBook Air, which is awesome. And I accidentally went down to the corner, and suddenly the window that I had opened flew off to the side, and I could see his desktop. And I went, what was that? Now, I know about hot corners, and I have a hot corner on my iMac because I use that to bring up my application launcher since I have an iMac and I can't just do the four-finger spider crawl thing.
I told you buy the touch or buy the magic pad.
I don't need it because like I said, I had a hot corner. It solved my problem for me. It's fine.
All right.
But now I have another hot corner, my second one, which when I swoop to that one, all my windows fly off to the side, exposed to my desktop so I can click on anything on it.
Nice. It's
beautiful.
That's really funny that I knew how to do that and I haven't.
I know. Like I said, I should have known about that one, but it was like getting a whole new fundamental app on my Mac. I was like, this is sweet. It solves one of the biggest annoyances that I've had, which, I mean, that's not too bad of an annoyance when you think about it. But
no, really, it's not.
That was cool. I was just like, whoa! I immediately went home and programmed it into my computer, and I'm loving it.
Nice.
How about you?
I'm going to pay off my Twitter that I sent out this week. I'm going to start announcing things I want to talk about on the show. And so the big one was I announced I went to the Not So Silent Night concert Live 105, and I got to participate in a new tech music trend. So one of the opening bands, Beta State, is the name of the band. They were doing their set, and they got to the last song, and they invited everybody to get out their smartphones and record their performance and upload it to YouTube, because they're going to go back and do a live. They're going to make a music video that's a live version of it using compiling everybody's stuff. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. So I looked at my cousin who I was there with, and I was like, Tyler, record it. And Tyler goes, I don't want that on my YouTube account. I was like, fine, give me your phone, because I don't have video recording abilities. So I busted out his iPhone 4, and I took a recording of it, uploaded it to my YouTube account. I've already got 26 views.
I'm one, just so you know.
Oh, nice. And so that was what that was, and hopefully they'll go through and pick that up, and they'll maybe even throw me a little credit. But yeah, I thought that was so that was what that was, and hopefully they'll go through and pick that up, and they'll
that's sweet.
Maybe even throw me a little credit. But yeah, I thought that was a, you know, it's I thought it was a creative thing to do, and I wanted to participate. So hopefully y'all get to see that someday, and
yeah,
be
that's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, I was part of that. But yeah, it was a fantastic concert, by the way. Green Day came and saved the day. The headlining band, Jane's Addiction, they had a family emergency and weren't able to make it. So the promoters of the show called up Green Day because they're their friends.
Wow.
And they're like, hey, can you do us a favor? And 6 hours later, Green Day was on the stage doing a crazy awesome concert. So
very cool.
Very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very nice. Well, I think that does it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Yeah.
Pretty sure we will be. I got traveling, but we'll figure it out. So, with that, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. Don't forget to do our little contest thing. Visit our site for more details about that. Like us on Facebook and retweet us or make a comment. It's basically what it comes down to, and you'll get a shirt. So, with that, we'll talk next time.